Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, June 30th, 2003. Today's session is entitled Connecting Cultures, Connecting Hearts, Session 1 of Bridge Crossing, A Transforming Adventure, presented by Vicky Schmidt, number SCV-2003-01. Let's listen in.
Heard it, Bob.
Heard it.
Did anybody ring the bell?
Yes.
Did? Okay. My name is Vicky Schmidt. I'm from West Fargo, North Dakota, and I'm very happy to be doing this workshop. It's about a topic that has burned its way into my heart for many years. And I just am very eager to share the story of Sister Parish, which I'll tell you more about, because I believe in it very strongly, and the experiences that I've had traveling in Latin America have definitely changed, transformed my life, my spiritual outlook. Everything that life says to me almost is shaped by my experience of living among people who are materially poor and who have a rich spirituality that is gifted to those who are willing to enter that context. Just a little bit about myself. I grew up in the church and very active. My family was very active. We were very Lutheran. I was actually adopted by a woman who, I was released for adoption by my birth mother, who made it clear when she released me that I was to be adopted by a Lutheran family. And she wanted me to be raised Lutheran, which I was. I went to church, Sunday school, choirs, all of that stuff, and went to, was baptized twice. Once by my birth mother and then by my adoptive parents, baptized Lutheran. I had two Lutheran pastors for godparents, went to a Lutheran high school, a Lutheran Bible school, married a Lutheran pastor. Couldn't be more Lutheran. But what I say and what you saw on the board was that I really felt called to be in mission around the world somewhere. I always said when I was small, I had my diary, I wanted to be a missionary in Africa and live in a grass shack. That was my life goal. But in all those years of being so part of the church and a part of the Lutheran heritage I had, I always felt that call to go into all the world and bring the good news to the poor. And I realized after some years of traveling and being with people who are materially poor, that that one thing I never was told in all those circles of churchism and Lutheranism is that the good news could come to me from the poor. And that was a startling revelation when that happened. I worked with refugees for many years from many, many parts of the world. I traveled around the world when I was 22. I sold everything I had, which wasn't much. I took out a loan and traveled around the world visiting mission fields with that idea in mind of becoming a missionary. But something happened, and that's not I felt that that wasn't quite right for me. When I was, we were in a parish in Bemidji, Minnesota, northern Minnesota, the bishop invited me, because of my refugee work, to travel to Central America, in part to visit refugee camps in El Salvador. El Salvador was in a war at the time. There were many refugee people displaced. And at the invitation, I, of course, Peter says I have terminal travel lust. I wanted to go, but we have three preschool children, and I didn't have the money for that. So I kind of thought my goal was to invite other people to go on this delegation to Central America. And I brought it to our mission committee at our church and told them I thought, well, really, somebody should be a part of this delegation from our church. Yeah, it was kind of an agenda item, and we moved on, of course, to other important things. And after the meeting was over, an 18-year-old boy who was the youth representative on our mission committee came up to me and said, "I think you're the one that should go on this trip." And I said, "Yeah, well, I'd like to, but, you know, I don't really think I can do this. And I think there are other people that could go." And he said, "No, I really think you're the one that should go. And because I think that, I want to give you the money for this trip." 18 years old.
Yeah, right.
Well, I went home and kind of brushed that one off. And 2 days later, I got a letter. Here, Vicki. I could tell by the look on your face that you didn't believe that I could produce the money that's necessary to produce on this trip. It was about $1,200. So, I'm going, that's right, I didn't believe it. He said, well, let me explain my story. So he went on to, in the letter, to say that when he was 10, he was hit by a car, and there was a trust settlement that was in the bank for him when he turned 18, $10,000. And that when he turned 18, he would have that money and would choose how that money could be spent. And he felt called by God to give that money to me. Well, then I knew I had to rethink this whole idea of what I'm doing, because something was going here. Eventually, I did give the money back, but I did go. We decided that I should go, and that the Spirit was definitely moving in this case, and I needed to listen. So I went to Latin America and spent the time there just being immersed in the culture and in the issues, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Mexico, El Salvador. Two of those countries were in civil war, one was post-revolution, so I was immersed in a tremendous amount of social stuff. My biggest fear before I went was not that I was going into war-torn countries and into areas where there was fighting, but that something would change within me. That was my fear. And of course, my fears were realized. My deepest fears were realized. It was quite a transformational time for me. When I remember getting off the airport after the time in Central America, I got off the plane in the airport in the town, and Peter came to the plane and said, well, what was it like? 30 words or less kind of thing. And I hadn't thought about this, but what came out of my mouth was, I just met Jesus Christ. And that was what hit me probably the most, was that in new and powerful ways, I met Jesus Christ among those who were materially poor. I guess I got my great commission to be doing this work while I was in El Salvador at this refugee camp, which was my original desire to see. And we spent a day in the refugee camp, and at the end of the day, the director of the camp gathered us into a small building, a pool building with just a tin roof. It was raining cats and dogs. We could hardly hear what was being said. But the children came in and they sang Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee in Spanish. And they were wearing obvious Lutheran World Relief kind of clothing, because there were New York t-shirts and UCLA t-shirts on these children. The director spoke to us and he said, we are suffering here in El Salvador. Here in this tiny country, Christ is being crucified every day, the suffering of the poor. And then he said, we have made these crosses for you to carry home with you. And we ask you to carry these crosses, and with it carry our voice, and tell the people we are suffering, and tell the people what is happening in our country. They were powerless and voiceless against what was happening. And they were going to give us, place this cross in our hands to carry it forward. And at that point, the children each came to the people in our group with a cross, a hand-painted Salvadoran cross. Join the community life. You've probably seen the, in fact, there's one in the village center of the different scenes of life painted on the cross in an enamel. It's so distinctive. And as he was saying, carry this cross, a young girl, probably about 10, 11, 12 years old, came forward to me with a cross. And I looked at her, she looked into my eyes, and of course my tears were showing my emotion at the moment. She handed me the cross, and I looked at her t-shirt, and it said Clearbrook, which is about 30 miles from Bemidji. She was wearing a shirt from my locality, and she handed that cross, put it in my hand, and she said, carry this cross with you and tell the people. And I've never forgotten that moment, or that girl, or that t-shirt. And it has felt, indeed, like I was given a great commission to carry forth that word of suffering. At the same time, really experiencing hope beyond beyond what I'd ever seen. That amidst all the suffering and persecution that people in some of those countries have endured, that they live with a hope that stretches far beyond what I understand hope can be, because I've never had to suffer like that. When I got home from that experience, I traveled 3,600 miles that first year trying to tell my stories, and it just didn't work. I mean, I told the stories, I cried, people cried, but I thought, I have to go deeper than this, because the way you understand this kind of thing is to go into that context and really live it and experience it as best we can with our limitations culturally. And I met an ELCA pastor, Dick Fenske, in Miami, Florida, at a LCA, Old Lutheran, social ministry event. And somehow, I'd say by the grace of God and God's Spirit, we were somehow brought together at this event and had similar life tracks in our faith journeys. And without giving a lot of details, what happened out of that was we both felt like we needed to move our experiences into a level that more people could share with us. Just to come and see what this is all about. Come and see. We wanted to invite people into this kind of experience that we have that have been so life transforming for us. And out of that was born, or birthed, the organization we call Sister Parish, Inc. Because a lot of people have sister parishes. This is a specific organization, an ecumenical nonprofit organization that links North American faith communities with communities in Latin America, or Central America and Mexico, and along the Texas-Mexico border that are marginalized, that have endured this kind of suffering that we experienced people having lived through in Latin America. We thought it was a really great vision, although it was pretty, as I call it, pea brain. It was a pretty small vision about what could happen. And our goal was to help more people in the United States, in our communities, be more conscious about what is happening in those countries and what is happening to people who are oppressed and suppressed and are not able to move life along. And what we didn't realize after we got into it was how important it was for the people in Latin America to have another community just know they existed. Just even that much. It was so powerful to them. So I feel like it's been a very spirit-led experience and continues to be. And probably the most important thing about it is the accompaniment. And you've maybe heard that word tossed around, the idea of walking with people, just walking with them, not doing things for them or building a house for them or building them a church, but just walking alongside of them into the context of their reality. There's a great missiology that I think is really helpful here. Missionaries, there's the missionary idea that you come in with a helicopter, you drop down in a country, you stir up a lot of dust and make a big scene, and you present your theology or whatever your mission is, and then in another cloud of dust, you're gone. Poof, you're gone, and then the people are kind of left there. What's that? And then the other kind is the ox cart missiology, where you get in the cart, which is a bumpy ride, you sit in that cart, you take the rutted road, mud rutted, dirt rutted, whatever kind of road, with lots of possibilities for dumping in the cart, but staying with the people in that daily routine, that daily struggle for the long haul. And that's what the mission and goal of Sister Parish is as an organization. I'm going to show you first a very brief video about, kind of give you an overall picture of what Sister Parish is, and then I'll talk a little more about it after that. And so, what do I need to do? Push play.
Sister Parish exists to foster mutual understanding and commitment to peace and justice among people in the United States and Latin America. This objective is pursued through intentional linking of parishes or groups in the United States
with parish-based Christian communities in Latin America.
Delegation travel to the North and South with homestays is an essential aspect in enhancing awareness and understanding in nurturing closer relationships.
I was about ready to leave the community I was visiting in Guatemala, and my new friend Lucia was walking with me. She began a conversation by saying, "I am nobody." Well, that's kind of an unusual way to start a conversation, and I probably stopped and hesitated, so she said it again, "I am nobody." Here in this community, we are nobodies in the bottom of the garbage dump. Well, having spent the morning at one of the largest dumps in Guatemala City, the image of that just came to my mind so clear. The acres of smoking, rotting garbage, and all the other senses, the smell and the sound, were just kind of overwhelming at that point. All around that dump were squatters' homes where people lived and made their living from pillaging and scavenging in the garbage dump. I saw one man fighting with a vulture who had swooped down and was trying to pull a piece of meat away from him. But it's food that they gather to feed their children, or they themselves eat during the day just to survive another day. So that picture was clear in my mind. And then I couldn't imagine the kind of lack of dignity anybody could have to say they were on the bottom of that garbage dump, not just the top where I could see, but just the depths and the deepness of that garbage, and that she saw herself on the bottom of all that. But she went on and said, "We are nobodies. We have no access to medical care, and our children don't have access to decent education. We're not even on the map of Guatemala." And she was right, because to write to her, I have to say her name, write her name on the envelope, and then write at the end of 16th Street.
Sister Parish is an organization that connects people of faith from communities like yours with communities of believers in Central America, Mexico, and along the Texas-Mexico border. Our goal is to come together as friends, building an interdependent community of brothers and sisters. By doing that, we promote mutual respect and dignity for all people.
We also seek to understand and overcome the sources of social and economic injustice and oppression. And this is where it all begins. The connection with the sister parish is more than congregation meeting congregation. It's you meeting and bonding with individual men, women, and children who share a vision in Christ.
Listen to what these Central American Sister Parish members say about their experiences.
We're starting out, it's kind of like we're opening up a new road here. At the beginning, it's a small road, but I'm realizing now that it's a much bigger road. And that there are a lot of followers of Jesus on this road. I think for all of us, the strongest impression we've had is the sense of solidarity that we felt between the people of Faith and Church here and all of us in this group, because in reality, they really are in solidarity.
Pues, yo,
lo
que he hallado más.
What I found in the visit here so far is the friendship that we have. Everywhere we've gone, all of the brothers and sisters with whom we've been, all the visits that we've had, and all of the places, I found this sense of friendship, and also, I mean, we have been treated well everywhere we've gone. And the way we've been received here is the way we need to receive them when they come to visit us. And here, it can be shown that it's the Spirit of God that unites them.
Elements of surprise are possible when new friendships are created. You may even be touched in unexpected ways.
Nothing that I look at that I have means the same to me anymore. Everything has kind of taken on a different, I don't know, I look at things differently, I guess. And I remember you saying that when we go, nothing will be the same. And I thought, I didn't know that was possible. And I really believe that you are truly changed, because the things that you encounter in that community and by heaven in the earth changes you forever.
What if you start feeling the pain, you start realizing really what the issues are? Because until you share the pain, you're still looking at it through charity's eyes. I'm not sure what the answer is, but for me, there has to be some changes, and that's partially probably what I'm struggling with, is what kind of changes this experience is going to bring into my life, because I'm really uncertain at this point. And oftentimes, if we're just approaching it from, we're going to give this school supplies and material to these folks that are poor in Guatemala, that doesn't mean anything. Because unless you know who they are, and you know what they struggle with, and you know the conditions they live in, those gifts are doing more for you than they are for them.
But then she said something that really hit me deeply, and for me encapsulates the whole vision of Sister Parish. She said, because you are here, and you have slept in my bed, and you have eaten my food, and you have carried my children, and because you prayed and laughed and cried with me, I am somebody. I have dignity. So for me, that's what Sister Parish is all about. Walking with our sisters and brothers in Christ, sharing life, sharing meals, sharing hopes and dreams, sharing our faith. And in doing so, we all receive dignity, and we all are somebody.
Are you ready to encounter people of another culture? Are you ready for a new Christian experience? Are you ready to see yourself and your role in Christ's church in a whole new light? If so, to find out more about the Sister Parish experience, call, email, or write us.
Sweatshirt is in that video, yeah. And that was the day that he sprinkled the baptismal waters on my head, is the day they gave me this shirt. So I didn't connect that in my own head today, but Bob's in here, he's going to change to my PowerPoint stuff just with some information on it. I do want you to know that this is, we work ecumenically. We work with a number of denominations, in fact, 9 different denominations, from Mennonite to Catholic to Baptist, Presbyterian, Lutheran, Episcopal, and they are often linked with communities in that are quite different from their own. So a Lutheran church like ours is connected with a Catholic parish, an Episcopal church connected with a Baptist parish, and so on. So it's very ecumenical, but we also are endorsed by the ELCA, Division for Global Missions, so we have that connection too. They don't finance us, but they do endorse us and encourage congregations to consider this. We do have companion synods in the ELCA. This takes it more to a congregation-to-congregation level to do the kind of work we're doing. We do have staff in the countries that we link, so that there are people in those countries, and usually one from North America or Europe, that works on a team with an indigenous person. So there's a kind of a culture brokering that's going on. The North American, or the gringo, or gringa, is able to help the people from the north move into the culture, and the staff person that is indigenous helps bring that to a deeper understanding.
A lot of the people that travel do not speak Spanish, and some of the sister parishes actually are in areas where the local people don't speak Spanish, but speak a dialect, tribal dialect of some kind. So it's not necessary to be fluent in that language to garner some of the benefits of traveling.
This is Peter Schmidt. He is my husband and also has participated in sister parish delegations of our church. Our church has had a relationship in Guatemala since 1991, long term, and the community itself kind of dissolved. The pastor of the church we were linked with was very authoritarian, top down, and did not allow the expression of the people in the parish to be heard. He did not encourage lay leadership, so it was kind of the old model of the priest putting the thumb on down on top of people's head and squashing their creativity. And eventually the community and the church itself really split, and now that pastor's not even allowed in the community, and the community members who we've come to know and love have asked us not to come in because it's dangerous. Just the whole scene is really bad. So we maintain our friendships with the community, but it did not fit the sister parish model any longer. So then we have begun a new relationship in Guatemala.
I'd like to just emphasize something Vicki already shared. The sister parish model, you know, the catchphrase is not charity, but solidarity. The first impulse that Christian people have when they hear about third world countries is, oh, we should give money. That's a good impulse, that, you know, that's very much needed. However, there's a limitation to that, because that is an imbalance of power. And the sister parish model of solidarity, going there, meeting the folks living in their homes, experiencing their reality, is giving something more important than money. It's giving yourself and time. And that can enhance their life more than something that money can buy. And so money is not a bad thing, and bringing something to help is not a bad thing, but bringing yourself is better. Over the 12 years we were connected with this first sister parish linkage, our congregation decided to support the teachers so that the school could operate and these beautiful, beautiful children that we all fell in love with could have an education. And so we would monthly send money. It wasn't a whole lot. We could pay the salaries of four teachers and keep the local school going. So there is some charity in that sense. But it wasn't our idea. We, after living with them and working with them over some time, came to that realization, and that was their idea of what they thought would be the most important way that we might be able to enhance their community life.
Keep talking.
Some of the things I want to talk about are on here, but I can talk about them anyway. I just want to add to that then too that, I don't know where to stand here, sit. The first thing that it's important to remember about the work we do is the accompaniment model, and that we enter that reality. When we first did this, we carried down suitcases of stuff and did all the old traditional things that people like to do and do make us feel good. It caused a lot of hostility in the community, though, and we brought 21 quilts, and there were a lot more families than that, and how do they decide? And it tore the community up. It created hostility and anger, and who gets what? And they're also desperately poor. So we did a lot of thinking about that and a lot of looking at what we were doing to perpetuate kind of the, we're the rich guys and they're the poor people down here, that imbalance of power and place. So we made some changes through the years as we've evolved and in our understanding and in our experiences. That is not what is helpful, like Brian on the video said, that makes us feel good, and that's about the most it can do. It might relieve someone's pain or give someone warmth for a little while, but in the end it's the helicopter taking off again, and it's leaving them with a few things, but not with the deeper sense of relationship. This whole week, this whole summer theme is about healing the world. And the healing doesn't come from bringing things or maybe not going to do for somebody, but to really give our hearts to each other and go with that sense of openness of wanting to receive the gifts that those who are materially poor have to offer us, who are in another level, economic level. And that has been the goal of Sister Parish right along, that bringing about healing comes from the relationships. And that you can apply to so many things in life. We've talked a lot about the gay-lesbian issue here at Holden. Once you hear the stories of someone who is gay or lesbian, you're not the same. You have a relationship that means this is somebody I know now and I care about, and they're hurting. And what is my faithful response to that as a Christian person of faith? The same thing happens when our community, and I say our community like I own it, but we felt so much a part of their community life, and they were a squatter settlement, which means they, through the years, have just squatted on land. That is what a squatter is. That they don't own, because they have no place else to live. And they collect building materials. You saw some of the homes. They're just four poles with plastic around the poles and a tin roof maybe, dirt floor. But they don't own the land. And in the case of the community that you were seeing in the video, La Isla, it's just right near the airport in Guatemala City. A developer, a wealthy developer in Guatemala, decided that he wanted that land to develop a resort, kind of touristy area. So he just said, I own this land. And he produced 10 years worth of tax statements to prove it, even though they were all falsified. They were all falsified statements. National Guard showed up with bulldozers, came to the gate of the community and were bulldozing the community over the edge of the ravine. And one of the women in the community placed herself in front of the three leaders of this group and said, we will not leave this land. And they held a gun to her head and threatened to kill her. And she stood fast and said, this is our land. You do not own this land. We have built this community. These are our children. We will not give up. And it was the most miraculous story, because you can go by these squatter settlements in the morning in Guatemala, and we come back the same route at night, they're gone. They've been bulldozed, and it's just a heap. The whole houses, sometimes children in the houses, bulldozed into a heap. Something stopped the National Guard that day, and they went. But there was a fight that went on for many, many years. Through the whole time, we've been a part of that group. We became advocates, you know, to carry our voice for the powerless kind of thing. We wrote letters to the president of Guatemala and on down. They had prayer vigils on the steps of the Supreme Court in Guatemala. We had them in West Fargo. People who had never heard about Guatemala were praying for these people, because we had told them the stories and they had seen the pictures, gathered a lot of other people. It was a powerful time for them. It was a powerful time for us to realize what advocacy really is and what having a voice to make change is, because they don't know that. You know, they, like they said, they're on the bottom of the garbage dump, the bottom, under all that rotting crap. That's how they understood themselves to be.
But to meet them is such an inspiring experience. I sometimes describe it as walking into the Book of Acts. You know, when you read the Book of Acts in the New Testament, it's amazing how much happened so quickly, led by the Spirit. All these people baptized in waves and many things like that. And that's how it felt to be there, because we're talking about people that are so faithful. And though they have such little resources, they always live closely to God, and they credit God. They're always saying, gracias a Dios, thanks to God for this or for that little mercy or blessing. And they really taught us a new kind of spirituality of a close walk with God.
The mission statement of Sister Parish is fourfold. First one is, if this comes alive over here, this constipated projector, which I worked so hard to put together, you'll see it. But first of all is raising consciousness. We become aware of another culture, another place in the world, and another part of God's family, the global family. And that we become aware of how people in the world are treated, how people are excluded and mistreated. And then when we also, part of that consciousness raising is to understand our own involvement in that, and in our country's involvement, which is very harsh to start learning about. The years of money that's poured into some of the countries of the world where we've supplied the training for terrorism, or we've supplied the weapons, or we supply the government to make sure that people are kept in a state that profits us as a country, export crops and all of that. And the second part is that once we understand some of that, that we work for reconciliation, that we work with the people in understanding this and then be reconciled with that so we don't, so we understand, so we can move on in the relationship of love and accompaniment.
I'd like to say that I do the best thinking about my church and my ministry when I'm not enmeshed in it, when I have a time separate away from it. And that's why being at Holden is good. I can think about stuff back home in a different way than when I am back home. And that was also true to travel to Guatemala. I thought more clearly, and different thoughts, different concepts about my life and about the U.S. when I'm not in it. And you might know what I mean if you've ever had that experience. You can get other perspectives. If you've ever heard BBC or the Canadian Broadcasting News, it has a different spin. It doesn't come through the same exact way that our news would come through. And so to be in a different country and different culture and hear people talking about the U.S. or talking about Christ or whatever, it's just very stimulating and bringing all kinds of new perspective.
While we're working on this, maybe some of you have had similar experiences that you could share with the group. Have you traveled there? Have you been part of this kind of relationship or this kind of learning setting? Anybody in here that has?
20 years ago, I made a trip to El Salvador, Nicaragua, that was life-changing for me. It was like the person on the video, Seth. And one of my first encounters was with a Roman Catholic priest that I was working with poor in El Salvador. And there was this group of North Americans, wealthy North Americans, who were down there to visit refugee camps. And he said, the problem with you people is that while you're sitting in your air-conditioned offices up there in North America thinking theology, we are down here in Central America doing theology by the sweat of our brow.
Yeah.
And that was like, you know, a knife into my heart, because it's true. It's really true, and we cannot ultimately just think theology, we have to do it. And that's what the Christians in Central America are at work with.
In Guatemala, of course, there's very small Lutheran presence, I think just a few congregations. It's mostly Roman Catholic. And that would be true in much of the Latin American countries. And that's another kind of stimulating part of it for me, is to have that dialogue that bridges denominations. And it's really a different dialogue than what happens here in the U.S. between Catholic and Protestant congregations, because their experience is so different in both ways. And we have found some of the most wonderful, saintly people that I have ever in my whole life had the privilege of meeting were some of the Catholic priests and the sisters that have been working among the materially poor.
Well, this is the title of the class today. If you're in the wrong class,
it's too late.
I think I've pretty much covered this, intentional linking and so on. The one thing I haven't mentioned, but you saw in the video, was that the delegations also travel from south to north, and the parishes in the north do help the communities in the south travel to be in our own parishes in the north, because obviously they don't have the money to do that. We believe the kingdom of God is already present but not complete, and the liberating gospel calls us to work together to build this kingdom. And now are the four pieces of the Sister Parish mission statement. Seeking to transform the world by sharing each other's experience so we can better understand and overcome the sources of injustice and oppression. Solidarity. That's the one I actually forgot to mention, but that's the putting ourselves into the reality of the other, and the idea of mutual respect and dignity and the advocacy for human rights. I mentioned the reconciliation. Finding courage to recognize our own failings, forgive each other despite the history of violence. And then the other piece I mentioned of learning to accept each other and respect each other's beliefs and practices so we work together. These are what I think are, you know, some of the key things about Sister Parish. Affirm the dignity of people. Right now, the people in Guatemala who have come out of a 36-year civil war are working with, as part of a Sister Parish project called Dignifying the Communities. Getting the stories out of the war and the oppression that happened there, like in South Africa with the Truth and Life, Truth and Reconciliation, affirming their dignity. They deepen our faith, reflect a shared spirit, build understanding of issues, give a new worldview to both sister congregations. And Peter mentioned this, solidarity is the new face of charity. I think there's a space missing in there. Face off. But that idea of giving a new face to charity. And I don't want to put down groups that go on mission trips and do a lot of good things for communities. We're just saying that this kind of event or this kind of experience that is long-term takes that kind of experience to a deeper level. That's what it does.
It's a little bit like if you're a pastor or working in a church, you might know that around Christmas time, many people that you don't ever see want to do something for the poor. And you get all kinds of baskets, and you get people wanting to sing carols, and it's almost more than you can process and plug in. And so you just sit down someday and ask, well, where are these people in July? They all want to sing carols at the nursing home in December. Why don't we have them sing songs in July and visit folks then? You know, why is it, and then it becomes so clear that it's our need, because it's Christmas, so I want to do it. And Sister Parish has the model of not just doing it because it feels good to us, but having it so that it actually is a benefit to the people.
I'm just going to really move quickly through some of these pictures to give you a sense of what the relationship, what kind of things happen when you develop a long-term sister parish. This is our newest sister parish in Guatemala. We take a look at what the issues are. In this particular case, a lot of women's activities are happening to help women wake up and better themselves, to see themselves with dignity and health concerns. So there's a wonderful women's group in the community that looks at violence against women, physical, sexual, spousal abuse, and they have groups that women come together and talk about this, sometimes for the very, very first time. This is a powerful poster about no violence, nonviolence. And there was a day of nonviolence when we were there just in November now, where it was a national day of nonviolence against women. You see the woman holding up her umbrella with all the fingers pointing, all the issues and stresses of women. The culture of the patriarch is what it says, the male culture. And we were able to dialogue with the women and the men too, although the men are a little bit hesitant to talk about this. The women then come together to make crafts. They learn how to make things to sell. They make clothing. They make household items and fun little things, which are sold then, and that supports their families. Hospitality is probably something I've never experienced as much as in countries that are so materially poor. It's been a wide eye-widening experience for me to have people give me their very last piece of bread.
All the folks you see there are from my congregation, my choir director, and my son was in that group.
Except for the Guatemalans.
Yeah, all the white folks, I should say.
Are there many men that join these congregations?
Many, in this one, yes. Many strong male leaders in this particular church, but again, in this particular congregation, the priest is so, he starts from the bottom. He starts building lay leadership, and it really shows. There was standing room only in the church, and many, many, many men came. But one of the homes that our people stayed in, our son, Christoph, is second from the left, another family shot. We stay in homes at least a portion of the delegation experience so that we really enter into a family. And that way we have are much closer in touch with the reality. And we danced at everything we went to. It was amazing. It was, we'd hear these stories of terrible persecution during the war, and we'd cry together, and then they'd bring out the food and we danced. It was amazing. We look at issues of health, how people get medication or don't get medication, how the government helps or doesn't help. They work in very simple kind of settings to provide health care to people. And this one x-ray machine is for the whole community. But it's scary because there is no protective garment worn, and women who are pregnant are x-rayed.
It's a whole generation of x-ray that uses far too much x-ray power too.
Yeah. Some of the youth culture in this area, they had a lot of graffiti on the wall, and they were trying to do positive graffiti about changing from drugs and violence and what the consequences of that are. It's a tremendous amount of problem with alcohol and drugs. We shopped with the families for our food. We helped prepare the food some of the time. Also, they're addressing the problems in the environment. So much of the land has been cut, forested, clear cut, and they're trying to do more for ecology and make people more aware of that. The priest of the church that we're connected with was murdered in 1994 on the street outside the church. It was a terrible time for the communities to have this happen, and it was a very much loved priest. He's now been taken from the city cemetery and has a burial spot in the church. It was a time of a lot of war, a lot of murders, and a lot of terrible oppression of people. Many of the people in our church there live in the barrio, which is this kind of home made from scrap wood and tin. And it's home, and it's a place of value for them. Here's how they make their house even, because they're building on a steep slope, so they have basically sandbags. I told them, well, we sandbagged for 5 years on the Cheyenne River, and I could appreciate the work that went into this. And one of the couples took us to their house. Basically what you're seeing where the people are sitting on the bed is their whole house, and that is the whole interior. But proud, so proud of what they owned. It was, you know, they build themselves, they build what they can afford to pay for, and that was about it. Guatemala is called the Land of Eternal Spring, and it is incredibly beautiful. And the colors at the markets are a feast for the eyes. I just love shopping there. Ruth and Naomi Cooperative, this is a community where all the men were rounded up during the war and taken into the Methodist Church, and the church was burned. And all the men in the village were murdered by the military. Diego, a Methodist pastor, went around to the outlying areas where the women had fled to with their children and gathered them back up over about a 2-year period and began to teach them how to do certain crafts and tailoring and weaving. And so that has developed into a very large cooperative, and you will see their stuff in the bookstore here at Holden. This is a Methodist cooperative, one of our sister parishes. You see the Children of the World bag there? I think that's in the bookstore. You've got a bag on the right here. This is made in this cooperative. tremendous amount of hope in that community. And now the children of the men murdered are starting the trades. This young man's father was murdered in that massacre, and he was just an infant. And now he's working in the cooperative. Country rich with history, went through these fairly quickly. In the National Cathedral now, all the columns around the cathedral carry the thousands of names of people who were tortured, murdered, or disappeared during the Civil War. And the list is thousands, and many of them have never been found. Quite a memorial. It's similar to the Vietnam War Memorial, really, in power. You just stand in silence and look at all these columns. Each column is a different state in the country of Guatemala. And remember, peace accords were signed in 1996, and now this peace memorial is in the center square. Another community, which you'll see, there's stuff in the bookstore. You see the little quiet bags, the Noah's Ark bags, and a lot of the things. You'll see Upavim on those labels in the bookstore. This was our very first sister parish in Mezquital, a large community of 50,000 people. People fled there from the violence of the Civil War, and there are 23 different dialects spoken in this community, and it's mostly women and children whose husbands were murdered in the war. They've developed a program in Upavim that is pretty astonishing, including a Montessori program, a well baby clinic. They have scholarship programs for children in the schools. We happened to be there over Thanksgiving this last fall, and so we've decided to prepare a dinner for the members of the church. Now this was, it was my idea, and as it got closer, I thought this is really a stupid idea, because it felt like we were flaunting our what we had. You know, we had the ability to prepare this wonderful feast. We ordered turkeys ahead of time, and they had them ordered for us, and we brought stuff that we didn't think we could find. And I was just getting more and more resistant to the idea, but it had been billed as a night for the families as a gift, and so we went ahead with it. What happened was something I didn't expect. First of all, we had, I can't tell you all the stories, but one of the things the priest said when it was all over, he said, probably this was the most important thing that happened during the week. And I said, well, why? And he said, these people who sat at table have never been served before. And we served them at their table with a plate. It wasn't the food, it was the serving. And we really learned some lessons, especially me, who thought this was a stupid idea.
The group tried to estimate how many people might need to be served, and they had a pretty good number, and they cooked for that number, but guess what? More and more people kept...
You smelled it in the community, yeah.
And children would come and hold up two fingers. I need two servings. And some came and held up seven fingers for their family. And Ricky has a story of the multiplication of the turkeys and the dressing.
I don't know how it went that far, but we had just enough to serve those, and we had 12 baskets full left over. It was an amazing miracle. Again, dancing. That's our son, Cristo. Little Martina. There's the priest. He is so cute. First day of Advent was the National Day of Nonviolence Against Women, and it was an incredible experience to be there and share that with them. And they fixed a wonderful farewell. We had brought a banner with them to share with them. Anyway, that's a real nutshell presentation of what Sister Parish is. Any questions? We have a few minutes. I'd be glad to answer any questions. I do have some Sister Parish newsletters, some brochures. I have my card. I've got some stuff if you're interested in taking it home. I just want to say that I am really eager to find more people willing to invest their hearts and lives in something like this kind of a relationship. The people in Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, all those countries are begging. There are communities we have waiting, and they're prepared to understand this mission statement.
but we don't have enough people in the North who really are ready to invest that deeply, and it's a deep investment. I won't minimize it, but I almost plead with people to consider this idea, and we have people, including me, that will help you get going on such a relationship. You had a question?
That was my question, was is there some sort, I mean, you, it is a deep investment, and it is not just a one-time, well, we're going to have a fun drive and we're going to connect with the church. So what sort of process does Sister Parish have for interviewing or making sure that a group of people or a congregation is ready?
Well, it's a discernment process on the part of both the North and South communities. And we have staff in the communities of Latin America that help develop those parishes. And then we have staff in this country that help your parish go through that process of discerning. Is it the right thing? Are we being called to do this? How do we go about it? And there's a Lyle Schaller quote that I use a lot, Peter told me about. When you bring this to a congregation, this is generally a good way to do it. You don't ask the congregation to vote on this. Because that gives them the power to say something I feel called to can't happen. So the Lyle Schaller quote says, count the yes votes. Count the people who feel called, committed to this, and find them, bring them together, and then work through this discernment process of, shall we do it? Who's being called? How do we make this happen for people who really feel called to do it? And it's an investment financially for people to go. We do a covenanting thing in our church. We pass a piece of paper around to everybody. They write down anonymously what they can put in. $5, $2,500, whatever it is. We collect that, and then we look at the cost of the whole trip for all those people to go. We subtract the difference, and we commit to, as a group, to raise the rest of the money. And we have always done it, always, always. And every sister parish that has tried this has also done it. They also, the second question is, how can I raise money outside from other people? Like, our daughter sent a letter out to everybody we've ever known and met saying, I want to do this, I feel called to do this. If you'll sponsor me for any amount, I will write you a full report when I get back. I will send you a postcard from Guatemala. And if you're close enough to where I can do a talk, I'll do that. And she raised $900 and threw that into the pot. She went three times in a row. I wouldn't let her do it just once. That's why I didn't want to have her asking all our people to contribute more. And the third piece that we ask people, if you have enough money and can give more than your share, how much could that be? And we've had people who paid for a second person to go because they felt that was important.
We've actually had people that were subsisting on welfare in this country, feeling called to go. It's amazing who the Spirit might touch. It's not always who you might expect, but people feel, I'm going to check this out. And like I say, in this group was our own choir director. And at first we were thinking, I don't know if he's the right one to go, but he has become so active. He's gone many times now. So that's one of the fun parts of it, and people bring back perspective. And it's great to have young people go, because when you do the group processing, young people have observed and tuned into a different set of things than the old folks have, like us, you know. And so there's sharing that goes on in the daily processing of devotional time.
Yeah, David, the guy I was talking about, was kind of a grumpy old guy, really grumpy. That's why we were afraid to have him come along. But he melted down to this little teddy bear person when these poor, materially poor people gave him a hug. He's just this puddle. And he got back and he gave a talk at our church and said, I don't know what happened to me, but the Spirit got a hold of me somehow there. And I'm going back.
Other questions?
How do you go about fundraising? You pay for them to come visit you as well.
Right.
And how does that work?
Well, that usually is after some years of connection, and then you decide that it's time for that to happen, and you maybe have a big enough core group then to do that work. They certainly can't afford it. It's the very first plane flight for many of them. For some in our first delegation, we've done it twice. It was the first time they saw a flush toilet is when they went to the airport. in Guatemala. We have stories of them living in our homes, and in one of the homes, they left the lights on all night. And the next morning, the host of that home asked, you know, how things went and how come they left the light on, and they didn't know what that little plastic thing on the wall was for. They hadn't been in a home that had electric lights. So you have many of these kind of experiences. At the same time, we structure it so that they can report back, and they, and in an honest kind of way, and they basically told us, you're just too damn busy. What's the matter with you? Don't you know you should be home with your kids? Don't you know that you should be talking to your neighbors? You are so structured, you are so scheduled. You try to do everything and you miss some important things by trying. They told us this. Were they accurate?
Yeah.
Absolutely on target.
When our first group came, we had 5 worship services then because we were so big and we didn't have enough space. So we had them going in and out of services, doing all this stuff. And we split them up and sent them over to another church and had 3 services. And in our evaluation, they said, you know, we were raised to, when we come to church, we come to the table hungry. We're hungry to hear the word of God. We're hungry to be fed. And here, we come in, we sit down, we're just kind of settling into the meal, and time's up. Everybody washes out of the room. And they said to Peter and our other pastor, how do you feed your people in this way?
Other questions?
How long would they stay?
Delegation is often 8 or 9 days over 2 weekends, both going down and coming up.
We didn't really answer your question about fundraising. That's an involved question and it takes some creativity, but...
how much would it cost to bring them up?
Well, it's the airfare plus any other expenses. Mostly they're housed in homes and fed by families. But it's, you know, you decide how many people you can handle, first of all.
It's less expensive for each of the Guatemalans that travel north than it is for the Americans traveling south, because we have to pay for translators and so forth down there, whereas when they come up, we often find volunteers for all that.
It is 11:45. Well, it's 11:47, actually. Thank you for coming. My card and all my addresses there are here. I'd love to get in touch with me, grab some brochures if you want to take home. There's a newsletter. You get a flavor of the stories. You can check out the website and pray about the Spirit's calling in your life about this kind of adventure.